We believe that alcoholism is a disease and that Alcoholics Anonymous is one solution to that disease. I'm here to bring you the voices of its members. Everyone that comes on the show, including myself, is an active member and has found recovery in the rooms of AA. As you listen, please take what works for you and leave the rest.
My name is Tony Sisson. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2-26-02, and my sponsor is David R. If not for the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here today, and I want to thank Tara for asking me to speak. It's always an honor and pleasure, privilege to share my experience, strength, and hope, because I'm not going to say no to something that's saving my life. No, I'm going to start from the beginning. You know, I'm an only child. I'm a Navy brat. My dad was in the Navy. My mom was a housewife. I was born on Ellis Island, where the Statue of Liberty is. And we moved quite often because, like I said, my dad was in the Navy, but I'm the only son. So I had that disease already, which I didn't know. I was selfish and self-centered. So I want everything now, and I want it whenever I get it. It is what it is. And that's how it was for me, because there was no consequences. I didn't have to share with anybody. So I just remember moving. We were in New York, and then I remembered moving to Norfolk, Virginia, and then coming to San Diego, California, Coronado. My dad was in the Navy, and I didn't have any friends that much because we kept moving. But when I got there, I remember I was there before the Coronado Bridge, all that stuff. So I was in Coronado, and I was about the first or second grade. But we didn't really have a steady house because my dad was in the Navy. We moved to Long Beach, California when I was in second grade, and we used to stay at other people's houses and stuff. Finally, I just remember we were in the Navy housing, and I was in like fourth or fifth grade, and I always did good in school. But something happened when we first got our new house, and I was in junior high school. It wasn't called middle school then. And like seventh grade, I was doing good. And then eighth grade, this disease, I can see it today, is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Like I said, I'm an only child, but I wanted to be a part of something. This part of like, have friends, a people pleaser. And what happened is in the eighth grade, seventh and eighth grade, I got into a club. So I don't see I have a problem because everybody is the same as me, except I was doing good in school. I just remember that. These other guys weren't. But I remember I was the one who was getting in trouble. By the ninth grade, I got kicked out of school because I was president of this club. And my mom, the classic enabler, would blame all my other friends. But I just said, yeah, it's all their fault. But in the eighth and ninth grade is when I got introduced to alcohol and drugs. Drugs is a part of my story, but I relate to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was in the eighth grade, I started doing drugs. I started going to concerts. Pretty soon, by ninth grade, like I was saying, I remember getting kicked out of school near the end of the year. But, you know, I was in that club, but I remember I was doing barbiturates. Barbiturates and alcohol, like Bill says, where he lost 40 pounds when he was taking pills and drinking. And I relate to that. Little did I know it was going to be that boomerang that turned around and cut me all to ribbons. Because in ninth grade, I got kicked out of school. 10th grade, after like 2 or 3 weeks of the beginning of school in 10th grade, I got kicked out again. I didn't know. You're like, God's looking out for me, just like it says in the book. Actually, deep down in every man, woman, child, there's a God deep down inside of us. And I believe that because he was looking out after me all this time. You know, my dad had passed away when I was in the seventh grade. You know, like I'm a mama's boy in like 10th grade. Man, I'm getting kicked out of school. My mom doesn't know where I'm at. I'm putting her through the ringer all the time. By the time I got in 12th grade, I got kicked out of school. My mom didn't know where I was at. I was in a boys camp, and she didn't drive. My poor mom, my cousins had to, she had to ask my cousins to drive and to, in order to visit me in camp. And I didn't know, like, I didn't even know, like, I'll be all right. I use that like a badge of honor. And, you know, to this day, I feel so sad for my mom when she was going through all that. My dad passed away already, and I just remember, I go, okay, you know, God looked out after me all the time. And what happened is I got out of that camp, I got a GED, and then within 2 or 3 weeks, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. I'm hanging out with all the people. I don't know I have a disease because, you know, I'm drinking and using. I'm using that like a badge of honor. Like, yeah, I was in camp. I got long hair. I'm like, this is what I prayed for. I, like all my friends and everything. And little did I know is like God's looking out for me. You know, my mom's going like, what are you going to do? You know, like you need to work or go to school. And what happens during that summer when I got out of that camp, within 2 months, I took a post office test. God, I didn't know I was going to pass. And little did I know as I passed. And during this time, before taking that post office test, I had a DUI also, driving under the influence. But they hired me over there. I got hired in, that was 11/28/73. And from there, I learned to drink and use more. Everybody there that I hired in with, they drank and used like me. So I didn't know I had a problem because I'm drinking and using with everybody else. That was in 73. I worked there for over 27 years. I didn't move up in the ranks. I was that one guy who could do his work. During school, I could do my work and then still get high and drink. But I was that one guy still, even at work. And I made sure I did my job good. And what happened there is I was drinking, using, and I just lived at home. I didn't pay no rent that much. And I'm getting all this money, and gambling is part of my story too. And drugs, and what happened is that's all I was doing. I was just, they hired me and I just worked. I was okay. I'm going downhill. There's these little signs. I remember my friend, he got in trouble at the post office, and they sent him to Alcoholics Anonymous, which I didn't know that. I just know it was down this hallway. I just remember that guy going, we're saving a seat for you. And I just never walked down that hallway no more. I said, no, I'm not going down that hallway. And this guy, I didn't respect my friend who got busted and he had to go to AA. I just remember him having to go there for over a year. And I said, well, are you going to drink after the year, right? Not even knowing, you know, like, no disregard for his welfare or anything. What happened is he relapsed after that 1 year. But I said, I'm never going. Like, that was the first sign I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't know because I just wasn't ready. Like they said, that when you're ready, you're ready. And I wasn't ready yet. And that was in the 70s, late 70s. I wasn't ready. Like I said, my sobriety date is 2/26/02. So I was still going on. What I know today is I hit one bottom after another bottom after another bottom. And hopefully you could relate to that. You know, you can identify to the similarities because I hit bottom after bottom after bottom. And, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. I'm none of those things. Is that, like I said, I was hitting bottom after bottom, but I can adjust. So I don't think I have a problem. And you got to remember, like I said earlier, you know, like my life is unmanageable, the first step already, but I don't see it because I'm hanging out with everybody. Like at the post office, they would give you so much money. So I'm gambling money and I just didn't see I had a problem. And little by little, I'm going deeper and deeper into that hole. Not talking to anybody, not letting people know what's going on, which I learned from Alcoholics Anonymous is not to carry that load, you know, that all this stuff going on. But I didn't get it yet. because God still had plans for me. I remember when in Alcoholics Anonymous, like maybe my 13th year, my mom, she caught cancer. They called me and said, your mom had a stroke. I remember going like, I'm not going to go see her. Like, my alcohol, I forgot to say, has a crystal form to it at the end. At the end, what happened is I went and saw her at that hospital after they told me, because I don't know how to deal with feelings. That's why I need drugs and alcohol. And what happened is I went and told my mom. I go, Mom, I'm here. I'm here for you. And she had that stroke, you know, where your eyes go in the back of your head. But I was holding her hand, and I could feel her hand tighten up on my grip. She knew I was there, the presence of me there. But I don't know how to handle these situations or these feelings. I don't think I told you, like, I was working at the post office. This was during Christmas season, and I'm working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And then, like I said, my alcohol, I was drinking a lot of alcohol. So I have all this stuff going on. But I remember going to see my mom when she did that. And I remember going into work and just crying. I go, no, what's going to happen now? I'm all by myself. You know, like, I don't know what to do. I'm not a grown up. I'm still in the 11th or 12th grade. I'm never grown up. Everything's coming too easy for me, so there's no consequences. Alcohol is driving me deeper and deeper into that hole, but I don't see it because I don't know how to deal with feelings. As I'm going deeper and deeper into all these feelings and stuff, my mom, I remember all my relatives, they all felt sorry for me. I didn't agree with all the surgeons and stuff, but I don't know how to act. Like, I'm yelling at them saying, I'm not going to pay. You can do all these things, but I'm not paying you. You know, I'm not pausing when agitated. I'm already mad thinking they did something. What I know today is, if I would have just paused and agitated, I had some kind of case, because there was people that I know that worked in that ward. They said they changed some of the notes, but like, I'm like a crazy man. And I just remember my cousins and my aunts and uncles just pulling me to the side, going, you need to just be quieter. Just don't even show up. See, I was that guy. I'm that guy who'd go to work all the time. And then when I got off, I'm going to go visit my mom in the hospital. But I'm that guy who would go to the bar first and then get drunk. And then I'm that guy who would go to the hospital, park his car while it's still running. All the windows are down, food on the seat. You know, not even thinking, no consequences for my mom. My mom's on the oncology ward. And I go into their reception area. And I remember falling asleep in the reception area, just like a bum. Just like a bum. Nobody even kicked me out. I didn't get arrested or anything. But I remember waking up thinking I was at the theater for some reason. And then I go, I'm in the hospital. I got to get out here. Didn't know where my car was or anything. No consequences. I know I was really, really drunk that day, because I don't know how to feel. But I'm supposed to go see my mom, visit her in the hospital. I didn't even know. So disrespectful. So disrespectful. You know, I wasn't taking no prisoners, and I'm going down and blaming everybody else. But I remember when she passed away, or before she passed away, she was a good church person, my mom. And I remember the priest from the hospital, I mean from the church, would come to our house and do a mass for her. I would just go in the room. You know, like, I should have been out there with my mom and all these things, but I wasn't. I just stayed in my room, and I think I smoked marijuana and drank. No disregard, just really bad. That's my mom, always there for me, who loved me regardless, and that's how I paid her back. When she passed away, I was married at the time. My wife would not drive in the funeral car with me. When we were at the funeral home, I'm the guy who's in the funeral parlor, the director's office, doing lines of cocaine and making large bets, betting. I'm that guy that come out like, oh my God, there's all these people here. I'm that guy who doesn't care. You know, but I want to be there. I want to be there, but I couldn't get it. I did not get it because I don't want to feel those feelings. I admire when I go to meetings today. You know, I go to meetings today because I identify with everybody sharing. And I hear the hope, hearing other people's experience when they're talking. When people are going through it and say, yeah, my mom passed away or I'm there for them, I admire that. Like, how the hell did they do that? I couldn't do it. Like I said, when all this was happening, I just didn't grow up. I just didn't grow up. I'm like, okay, this is good. Just not thinking the consequences and not moving forward, which AA today allows me to do. You know, I have that choice, but I did not see it then. My ex-wife, with the best thing that ever happened to me was when we were married, I just remember I blamed her like a fool. The best thing that ever happened to me. I blamed her for having no friends. And then she was the adult in the relationship, in the marriage. She was the one. All I know is I went to work, drank all day, and come back home, and then kept drinking. And when she was around, we had that long-distance marriage most of the time because she worked for AT&T and lived in San Francisco. Best thing that ever happened to me. But every time she left, I was off and running. And finally, I just saying, I don't have no friends because of you. You're the reason. I just told her that. Couldn't tell her to her face. I told her when she was in San Francisco, while I was with my girlfriend who worked at the post office, I was that guy. Just did not see it all the time. And little did I know was God keeps giving me these second chances. I mean, second, third, fourth chances all the time. But I didn't see it. I'm approaching 20 years at the post office now with all this stuff going on. Marriages. I inherited the house from my mom and day and night, like I trashed it. I trashed it. That's how I thanked her. And all my neighbors, the neighbors that saw me grow up, I didn't even know. I'm that guy who's working at, I got a good job at the post office, who couldn't keep the electricity and water on. I'm that guy, that demoralization. I remember going to my neighbor's house who lived right across the street, this lady that saw me grow up. And I remember, I don't know if you know those big old white buckets. I remember having like 4 or 6 of those buckets, going over there so I could get water from her so I could flush my toilet and wash dishes. That wasn't a bottom to me. I'd find another bottom and I go, okay, there's a solution here. There's a solution here. Not even thinking it. Not even thinking. I was that guy who would all be out in the backyard. They go, oh, you're building a swimming pool? I was just out there digging. Didn't even know what I was doing. I'm that guy that drugs and alcohol took me that far. It took me that far, but I didn't see it. On my 20th year, God, what I know today is God just said, enough is enough. I lost my job for 13 months. But you got to remember, when I first hired in there, I stayed at my same position. But all the other people that I hired in there with, they all became supervisors or superintendents. So I never really got in trouble there. But then there was some kind of scandal with cocaine and everything. We all lost our jobs for 13 months. I just remember, like my sponsor says, he said, I'm a mind reader and a fortune teller. And that was me. I lost that job for 13 months. And I kind of knew, I go, okay, I need to go to these meetings because I know this is what the judge is going to tell me I got to do. So I'm going to start going to the meetings. But I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. I just don't want to go to jail. And I remember going to this first couple meetings, going in there, and I'm just going, and all of a sudden it's like I'm hearing the hope, and then they ask me to share. You got to remember, I'm keeping all this information. I inherited a house from my mom, and I'm about to lose it. I just lost my job after 20 years. All this stuff is coming down on me. I don't know if I'm going to jail. I don't know what's going on. And what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to do is tell everybody what's going on. But, you know, like, I got too much pride to let you know. And what happened is, going to this meeting, I cried like a baby. I cried like a baby and said, yeah, I lost my job. My mom, I'm an only child. Both my parents are deceased. I just inherited this house and I'm losing it. I don't know what to do. I felt so good after like just saying all that. But I just remember going back to that meeting, and that was like the best thing that, you know, like that little window was open because I let all that, those rocks, I dropped the rock. I let it all out. But I didn't know. I'm a mind reader and a fortune teller. I'm not an alcoholic and I'm not an addict. So like, I just said, okay, you know, like I'll figure this out. And little did I know is God looks out after me. And he has the whole time. As long as I do the right thing. I always say like, there's something wrong. There's something wrong when you have to UA with the PO. There's something wrong. If that UA is dirty, you go into jail. I couldn't figure it out. All I had to do was give a good UA. Couldn't figure it out. And what happened is like, I didn't have that job for 13 months. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll say whatever you want me to say. Now test me all the time. Man, God is good. And he gave me that job back after 13 months on my 20th year. So I'm like on my 21st year, I got that job back. And then the first day I work, I remember, I already pawned my car off. I pawned everything and I had to be at work. But you know, the Chicken Little story, you know, like, I had two dogs at that time. And one of the dogs came out when I was taking my bike out of the garage and got hit by a car. Got hit by a car the day I'm supposed to go in. What I know is she broke her hip. But I had to bring her in. Like, there's nothing I could do. I just got my job back at the post office after 13 months. I just got my job back. I need to go there. You know, they're not going to believe me. I need to go there. I got my friend to watch my dog, and she dislocated her hip. But I didn't know that at that time until after I got off work. But I had to go to work and show up. You know, and I made it to work. But I remember I was riding my bike, and I just remember it was during that time when people were getting hit, you know, from cars with bats, you know, like riding your bike. And I just remember I had to ride my bike from Long Beach to Carson, California, and I'm just going. I remember like 3 a.m. at a train, a railroad stop, going, yeah, I'm a dead man. Like, there's two cars right there, 3 a.m, not looking good, but nothing happened. And I remember going to my first day of work and I forgot the code. They're giving me all responsibility. They gave me the code so the alarms wouldn't go on and everything. I got to know the sheriffs there. Like, they live right, they were right across the street. And I'd open up and this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I remember the people would call me up and they said, hey, you left the alarm on. And it was my friends. You know, I know it was my friends. And I go, hey, I got my job back. I was so delusional. I really did think I'd get my job back. So they go, yeah, you forgot the alarm. So it's a silent alarm. They did that. And that was my first day of work. Within 7 to 10 days, cunning, baffling, and powerful. I don't have a car. I told them you could test me anytime. Next thing I know, I'm riding my bike with a backpack and I have a torch in the backpack. Completely forgot that all this stuff is going on, you know, like, hey, you got your job back. Jesus Christ, what are you doing? And I completely forgot. And I remember I had a torch in that backpack. Like I said, my alcohol had a crystal form to it, but I relate to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was within 7 to 10 days when I got my job back. But little by little, see, in my head, I thought, yeah, I'm a good worker. Like I was doing, I was working good. But man, every day I was loaded and drinking. And next thing I know is I start coming in late. And I'm thinking, my boss is prejudiced. Like, that's the disease. I can justify and rationalize anything because I don't want to look at myself. You know, what I know today is, I've heard it in meetings, You take the me out of blame, you get blah, blah, blah. And that was me. You know, I'm blaming, like, I'm going downhill again, and I don't even see it. I don't even ask for help because I don't know I have no problem, because I'm thinking, like, I got my job back. I'm good. And little did I know that. And then I'm going, why are they sweating me? Like, what do you mean I'm late? Like, other people are late. But see, I just got to worry about me. And I'm thinking my boss is prejudiced or something. Like, why is he getting mad at me? It's so funny today when I look at it, because I had to be at work at 4 a.m. to open the post office up for the carriers who come in at 5:30 or 6, so we could start doing their mail and stuff. And I wouldn't get to work until 7 o'clock. Everybody's waiting for me. The supervisor would have to open up. But I didn't see it. See, little by little, like, I'm digging my hole deeper again and deeper, but I don't see it. I'm thinking, yeah, I got my job back, so that's it. They're just going to leave me alone because I do such a good job. I wasn't even thinking right. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. I get arrested. Well, they talked to me and they said, we've seen you move this package 17 times. And I said, so? And what I know today is I had all kinds of stuff at my house at that time before. And if they would have checked me, like, it was all other people's names in there at that time. But I didn't, you know, I got rid of everything, you know, because if they would have just came over to my house and, like my sponsor said, I'm a mind reader and a fortune teller. And what I did is, so before they can check my house, I'll just quit. I'll just resign. And that's what I did. And then I told my girlfriend at the time, because now my wife's and ex-wife's in San Francisco and I got a girlfriend with me. I said, hey, we got to get rid of everything in the house, man, just in case they show up. But God was looking out after me. Like, nobody ever showed up. I quit. And little did I know, I could have got that job back. Let's say it was like July 10th. And they prosecuted me July 8th. They gave me a whole year. I have too much pride. Too much whatever. All I had to do was ask for help, and I would have got my job back. I would have got my job back, but I didn't ask for help. So God just looked at me and says, oh, okay, you dumbass. So let's see what you're going to do. Like, okay, so I'm not working again. I'm delusional. Like, my union steward will get me out of this again anyway. So I'll look for another job or whatever. So my bright idea was to get my retirement out. You know, get my retirement out and spend that money. And what I did is I gambled and used it on drugs and women. Money's dwindling. And next thing I know, God goes, I've had enough, because you just don't get it, guy. And what happens is I get arrested. I get arrested again. This is in Orange County. And I just remember when they arrested me, I didn't know that was a cop right next to me, and I'm going back and forth. And he's just telling me to pull over, and they send me to Orange County. And I don't even know what's really going on. I think I'm going to get bailed out or something. They're going to let me go on out. But what I know today is that's the loop or something. I was going to the racetrack to collect some money that I went on a ticket, and I never got to do that. And I remember they sent me to the Orange County, had like three different pairs of pants on. Just bad. I couldn't make no collect calls. Nobody knew where I was at. And next thing I'm in this, I'm at the jail. And then they send me to this other place that was called the farm. I don't even know what's going on. Like, I couldn't make no calls because we would leave early in the morning to go to court and come back late at night. So I couldn't make no calls out. So nobody knew where I was at because I put that collect thing on my phone. I just want to plead guilty. And then they said, you don't want to do that. And I remember laughing at people when I was going to court, going, when they let them out on an OR and then they get busted for the same thing. I go, what a dumbass. Jesus Christ. But that's me. I was that guy. That almost happened to me. Because I remember when after 3.5 weeks, they let me out. My friends found out where I was at. This disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Forgot about the maybe 3 weeks I was in jail. They let me out on Thanksgiving, 3 a.m. My friends picked me up. Completely forgot that I was locked up for those 3 weeks. Nobody knew where I was at. And I remember going home. On the way home, like I said, my alcohol had a crystal form to it at the end. And that's what I went to, was drinking and speed. Completely forgot. Went to go pick up my car that was impounded. And the guy in there, it was a police officer, and then he was just looking at me. Man, I came to get my car, and then I'll go cash my ticket. There's all that white print that they have on the windshield that was impounded. So I go to the racetrack to collect my money. I'm a mind reader. I'm going, okay, I got to drive slow so nobody stops me. I can't get in no trouble. And I'm high as a kite. Next thing I know, police pull me over. And then it turns out to be that guy who was in the office when I picked up my car at the impound. Now I'm begging. I'm going, Jesus Christ, what do you mean, Mr. Sisson? I just talked to you. Like, what's going on? I'm just begging. God looked out after me again. I almost got arrested again, but there was other knuckleheads at the park, and he went after them. I didn't even heed to the calling. Like, okay, I can't use or drink no more, man. Like, Tony, I can't do that no more. That wasn't even my solution. My solution was go to the racetrack the back way. I go, can't go this way because that's where the police is. Didn't even think about getting almost arrested again. Didn't even come to me. So, and then God just is going like, you're just not seeing it. So what he did is like, my money is dwindling. And little by little, he sends another, he goes, okay, the post office is calling you. Oh, I lost my job. Now, and then I got a federal and state case now. All I had to do was tell them I have a problem, and they probably would have sent me to rehab or something. But I never did anything. I forgot. I just, I'm not calling them. I'll get my job back anyway. Delusional. So now I got a federal case and a possession case of speed. So all this stuff is going on. Like, oh my God, I don't even know how bad it is. Like I said, there's something wrong with that new way. And I remember this one guy, they always looked out after me because God just knows that I'm just not jail material in. And what happened is, like I said, I had a federal and state case. I'm getting ready to go to jail. I'm getting ready to go to prison because I'm testing dirty. Even when I know, I like call at 4 p.m. Next thing I know, it's 3 a.m. and I'm using. And I'm going, man, I got to go. I'm going to go test. All of a sudden, the alarms go on. I couldn't figure it out. All I could do is give a clean test. I'm getting ready to go. I know it's close. But then the feds took over. So I had that federal case. They ended up sending me to a rehab. And then my state case, they took it over. So God looked out after me again. I ended up going to the Phoenix House in Venice. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. But I can follow directions, and I did really well over there. I thought, but I never got a sponsor. I never did the steps, but I was just killing time. Didn't even do anything. Just killing time, but I could do good. And I got out of there. It was May 3rd to November 3rd of 2001. Got out of there and on the way home, little did I know, cunning, baffling, powerful. There I go again. Don't see that I have a problem. That's my experience. Like, all the time, just going lower and lower. And pretty soon, within like 3 months after that, I remember seeing my federal PO knocking on my house that I'm losing, and I inherited from my mom. So I'm not an alcoholic and I'm not an addict. And what happens is I go to my federal PO and tell him I have a problem. I need help. They told me you can either go back to Phoenix House, which I was not going to do, is I got too much pride and I don't want you to see how bad, you know, like I messed up. I could go to Impact House or I could go to Substance Abuse Foundation. So I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. But I'm going to go to Substance Abuse Foundation. That's in Long Beach. I'm from Long Beach. So I go, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. And what do? I call there when they're closed, thinking they'll never answer. I'm doing what they told me to do. And they answer the phone, and they called me after 3.5 weeks, said, we got a bed for you. Now, all of a sudden, I'm stalling. Like, can I bring a pillow? Can I bring a blanket? All this stuff. And little did I know is that was my journey. 2-26-02 is my sobriety date. And what happened is I went in there. We had a picnic, and then on a Saturday, and then on Monday, we started going to all these classes, all these groups. But I like going to the groups. I didn't know I had all these stuff going on with me. But what I really liked was going to the AA meetings inside the rehab, and then going to the AA meetings. They bring you to all kinds of meetings every day. And I love that. I use that badge of honor. I go, hey, this is cool. That's me. 30 days, 60 days. But I liked going, because I go into the meetings, and I identify with everybody and hear the hope, hearing other people's experience. But I knew I wasn't alone. I could see the smile in all these faces. I could see that they've been there and done almost the same thing as me. And yet they're okay. They're not carrying that load. And what happened is I stayed at SAF. I stayed there for, 8 months. And I really had only 7.5 months. But, you know, like, I didn't want to leave because, I didn't even know I was homeless. I was losing the house that I inherited. I already lost it. But now I was going to go to a sober living. And I found that by accident. A friend of mine. And we're still sober today. But I ended up going to his sober living. But I didn't want to go. I was so scared that I stayed at that rehab for like 4 or 5 more days. And then you got to go. And I ended up going to that sober living. And there I learned discipline, and I just started hanging out. Like, got in the middle of the herd. I didn't understand that. And at my 9 months, I remember my MP in Long Beach, California was my home group and a happy hour at MWA. And I remember going to this morning meeting, and I remember them saying, hey, everybody's going to their cousin's house or whatever for Thanksgiving. And so I just lied, and I said, yeah, I'm going to my cousin's house. What happened, like, I'm consistent on a routine I do all the time. I go to my morning meeting after doing all my meditations and prayers in the morning, which I still do. And then after that, I drove out to visit my mom and dad and told them they don't have to worry about me no more. They're buried at the VA cemetery by UCLA. And then coming home, you know, like, there's something about Alcoholics Anonymous. When you say you're going to do something, you do it. And I remember, okay, I'm going to pull off on this one street. I was talking about my one cousin, but I didn't know where he lived. But I knew where his brother lived, kind of. I forgot. And I remember getting off and making a left on Long Beach Boulevard and going down one street. And I remember to this day, driving down the street and then making a U-turn after 2 blocks and stopping in front of a house. What are the chances? I stopped in front of his house, my cousin's house. And he was walking down the driveway with a kid in a stroller. There was no kid in the equation. He lived less than 2 miles from me. And I just started crying. I go, Rudy. I go, man, like, he goes, this is Joyce, kid. Like, I've been away for so long, I didn't even see it. And then he said they were having the reunion at his house. And I'm telling you, like, what? I was so scared, like, I got to go to a meeting or something. I can't do this. Because that was just too much coming at one time. That was at 9 months. And I remember going to a meeting and sharing about it. I said, I'll be back Christmas. And like I said, I'm consistent with my routine. And I was calling my mom's sister, who's still alive. She's about 93 now. And I told her couple nights before that I'll be there. And I remember I have the same routine. You know, I wake up, I do my prayers, I do my meditation books, and then I went to the meeting, but now I had to get a ride from somebody because my car broke down. Little stumbling block. And then right after that, I got a ride to the sober living where I'm at, and then I catch the bus. I had to catch a bus to to visit my mom and dad, which I did. It was a total of like almost 4 or 5 hours catching a bus on Christmas Day. On Christmas Day. You know, and I remember coming back. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go. They told me they're having the Christmas party, so I'm going to go. I told them I would go. So I remember doing the same routine. I go to my one cousin's house, but they're not there. They said it was at somebody else's house. So I said, fuck it. I'm ready to, like, hey, I called my friend, like, I got an AA book. I'm ready to go home. Fuck it. I'm standing on the corner of Long Beach Boulevard and Del Amo. And next thing I know, my aunt, the one I talked to a couple nights before that, her son picks me up, like out of nowhere. I used to, like, if you could see me, I don't have my real teeth. I have a full set of dentures, you know, and I'm bald headed. But back in the day, with everybody, I used to have long hair and 3 front teeth. So how in the hell did my cousin, he picked me up? Like, I'm bald-headed and I got a full set of teeth. He picked me up, and I went to that party, that Christmas party, crying again. So I don't know how to handle this, but I'm staying this time. I'm going to play it out. They were grateful that I'm not using or drinking. But I got there, and I'm crying. And what I know today is this was 2/26/02, but after 9 months. And so it was Christmas, the end of 2002. And what I know is, like, they were less than 2 miles from my house. And there was kids there, nieces and nephews, 14 years and younger there that I don't even know. You know, because this disease isolates me and blames everybody else, thinking I got it all right. And I met all those nieces and nephews. It's crazy. You know, and they just, and to this day, my aunt still, she puts Bible pages for me to read. And you're like, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. And she goes, you're not taking no drugs or drinking no more, are you? And I go, no, I got to, I'm okay. I'm okay, auntie. But this disease, they all earned my seat. They all paid for it. She just goes, and I don't say anything. I go, yeah, I'm good. I'm good today. And what happens is, Alcoholics Anonymous has been there for me all the time. There's always these little God shots. They're unexplainable. I'll close with this. You know, I worked in treatment. They told me at Kaiser that I had cancer. They found it in my lungs. And then they had the process. So they found out it was kidney cancer. This one guy I'm talking to, like, I just, in and out. That, you know, I tried to, what I know with Alcoholics Anonymous, you'd be positive. And I just remember him saying, yeah, you got this. And I always brought people from AA with me as a second set of ears. I was a 2-pack-a-day smoker. And my friend gave me these lozenges. And I remember going into work. And I had to work these two houses, that's 24 guys. 12 guys, and my program manager decides to go out and smoke crack, so I'm by myself. And my stress ball is cigarettes. I couldn't smoke, but I made it through that day. That was April 28th of 2016. May 3rd, 2016, they took out my kidney, but I quit smoking cigarettes. I haven't had a cigarette since. Like, is it God or is it odd? It's like weird. But before that, my one doctor said all this stuff is going on. They gave me to this other doctor, and, you know, he was going to talk about the operation of taking my kidney out. And so, like, I get in there to this office, and I'm with somebody else, and this other guy, this nurse, is going, I know you from someplace. And I'm going, like, in my head, like, motherfucker, I don't know you. Just leave me alone. I got cancer. I've got stuff going on, you know, but I just didn't say anything to him. And 10, 15 minutes later, he leads us to the office to get ready to talk to the doctor. And he goes, I know you from someplace. And I go, where do you know me from then? And he goes, I know you from a meeting. God. Right then, like, I'm getting chills now. God showed up again. God goes, you're an overthinker, Tony. I got you. Like, please, Tony, just stop overthinking. I got you. You know, to this day, like, my cancer's either the nodules are either the same or they disappeared. I just keep doing the same routine, you know, like just like in Alcoholics Anonymous. I juice and I just try to stay out of my head. I'm in Oregon now. I'll close with this. I'm in Oregon now. I moved here from California, and I moved here with my sponsee and his wife and two kids. I'm an only child. You know, I've got no family. I moved up here with them. They built me a tiny house. I'm getting used to the snow. It's getting ready to snow. I'm in a tiny house where the pipes freeze. But like I worked in treatment for a while here, but only in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm telling you, if you're new, hopefully you identified with some of the feelings of what I was talking about. Believe me, man, you can't be that bad, because I've messed up so much, and God's got your back. If you don't believe in God, just look at all these other people in the rooms. It's not that bad, because ain't nobody could beat us up like our heads. And my head always does that every day. But I know at the end of the day, I thank God, because this disease is cutting, baffling, and powerful, and try to separate you from Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of your understanding. So this is the bright spot of my life, and I just wanted to thank everybody and thank Tara again. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Start.
How do you feel?
I feel good. In the beginning, I was just thinking, like, I'm just like, oh, my God. But then once I got going and I think about, I'm telling you, all the blessings, I'm grateful. This is a good deal. I want it for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you. I had a hard time with how hard you are on yourself, on your younger Tony.
Yeah, I know.
The poor kid just didn't know.
No, oh. I was running buck wild.
Yeah, you were.
Didn't see it until later on. When I had to look at myself, but then the glimpse was when my friend who had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous in the post office, he has 1 year more than me. Hmm. And when he had to go, but I don't have a problem. I just didn't want to go to jail. But I hope I did okay. Sorry.
You did great. You did great. I'm going to ask you a few questions. Okay.
Okay.
What I heard you say a few times was your inability to deal with feelings and handle emotions. You spoke of your mother's stroke and when she was in the hospital, and it was Christmas time, so you're working a lot and you're yelling, you're the crazy man at the hospital. So then we fast forward to when your mom passed away. How old were you? You were not in sobriety when she passed away.
No.
But less than a year of sobriety, so you're about 9 months into sobriety, and you go to the cemetery where mom and dad are and tell them they don't have to worry about you anymore.
All the time. Yeah. Now it is because I'm in Oregon, but before I'd go all the time and leave them my chips and everything.
Hmm.
And tell them that they don't have to worry about me, because I know they're looking out after me. I know that day, but I didn't know how to handle it. And nowadays, you know, when, you know, like the feelings and emotions, I breathe and I know God's got my back. Either that or I talk to my sponsor, I talk to other people. I go, okay, let's go. Let's go. I'll be all right.
You said that a lot. You said a lot, God's looking out for me. You said that throughout. They had a regular drumbeat of that.
Because my favorite saying is actually deep down in every man, woman, and child, there's a God deep down inside of us, obscured by calamity, pomp, all this stuff going on. Got all this stuff going on. And my first sponsor said, you know, like how it works. Well, you woke up today. Bottom line is you woke up today. You're going to deal with life on life's terms. So those two things help me all the time. He's got my back. I'm the one who questions the faith. I'm the one who takes it back all the time, all the time. You know, and then who do I blame? God. And then I said, oh, sorry about that, God. I didn't mean that. He'll get the blame. But he's got my back all day. Like, hey, what? All I know is that at 9 months when I went down that street, and then I go, wow, wow. And when they picked me up on the corner, those two things within a month, I go, this is amazing. I remember that every time because it brings me back. It grounds me. And then working with new guys, it always grounds me. Calling my sponsor, all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think you should be nicer to the younger version of you. You were what, 12 when your father passed away?
15.
15. So you were 15 when he passed away. That's a lot to carry for a kid.
Great. And going in, and then I went into a club and it was all downhill from there. I forgot to say that when he's dealing with cancer too. And we had a ditch party at the house, and then we all were running when he came home. And I was running too. I'm going like, he comes and picks me up. No disregard. I think like, what an ass.
I didn't follow that story. Say that again.
Yeah, my dad came home and we had a ditch party.
What's a ditch party?
You know, where everybody not go to school.
Oh, got it. Okay, I'm with you.
And I remember everybody all running, so I'm running too. And then he picks me and my best friend up. And I wasn't even thinking. I'm not that guy no more.
No. Mm-mm. That's clear.
I couldn't wait to do this. That's why I think I was like overcharged in the beginning.
You did a great job.
I know she's calling soon.
Yeah.
This was interesting. I told my guys I sponsor, yeah, I'm going to speak tonight. They go, where at? I go on the phone.
It is a speaker tape that will live forever and ever and ever.
Okay.
Is there anything that you left out of your story or anything that you're thinking of now that you'd like to share?
No, that's it.
Okay. Can you please leave a final message for the newcomer still suffering?
For the newcomer still suffering.
That's right.
Don't go at it alone. Try to go to a meeting. Try to find somebody. Look at the similarities, not the differences. All you got to do is ask for help. You'll find it in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to do nothing alone. Just keep showing up.
For more information, read the first 164 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous or visit keepcomingback.net.